Ekhatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekhatra AI. Welcome back, everyone. We're diving deep today, tackling a book many of you asked about, The Gene, An Intimate History by Siddhartha Mukherjee. And this isn't just a science book, is it? It's more like, well, a biography.
Exactly. A biography of maybe the most fundamental concept in life, the gene itself.
So our mission today is, well, to trace this idea. How did it go from something purely theoretical, almost philosophical, you know?
Right, back in the 19th century.
To the physical stuff, the DNA code that we can now incredibly edit with tools like CRISPR.
And getting that history is so vital. Mukherjee's main point, really, is that the gene isn't just biological material. It's this powerful, shape-shifting idea.
An idea that's affected how we see ourselves. Exactly. Identity, destiny, all that.
Precisely. For millennia, actually. It's tangled up with our ambitions, our fears. And the huge question the book leaves you with, why we're doing this deep dive now, is, okay, we can rewrite our own code.
Which is staggering to even think about.
It is. So what do we become?
Yeah.
Ethically, biologically.
Yeah.
What does humanity look like next? This context is essential for grappling with what's coming.
Absolutely. And the guide for this enormous story. Well, yeah. You couldn't ask for someone better suited than Siddhartha Mukherjee.
Yeah, his background is pretty unique.
He's a practicing oncologist, so he sees this stuff at the clinical level, right? A cancer doctor.
Right, and a biologist, a researcher, too, at Columbia.
That mix feels really important.
It's crucial. Because he's not just reading about genetic diseases in, you know, some abstract way. He's dealing with the real world impact.
The human cost, day in, day out.
Exactly. He sees the stakes of what we inherit.
And besides that clinical side, he's just a fantastic storyteller. I mean, he won a Pulitzer for his book on cancer, The Emperor of All Maladies.
A phenomenal book. But what really elevates this book, The Gene, is the personal angle, that word intimate in the title. It's not just for show.
Ah, right. He talks about his own family history.
He does. He frames this huge scientific story with his family's own experiences with severe mental illness, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder affecting uncles, cousins.
Wow. So that makes it less of a sort of detached history lesson.
Completely. It makes it urgent. He's wrestling with the legacy in his own DNA, you know, trying to understand fate, inheritance. It makes the whole quest feel very personal, very human.
Got it. So that's the intimate part. What about the overall scope? You mentioned millennia.
It's epic, truly. It's basically a chronological journey. Starts way back with the ancient Greeks like Aristotle and their ideas about heredity.
Okay.
And takes you all the way up to the bleeding edge, to CRISPR, and the gene editing revolution that's happening, well, right now.
That's a vast sweep of history and science. How does he make that manageable, relatable?
He focuses on the human drama within the science, the rivalries, the breakthroughs that took ages to be understood, the sheer frustrations sometimes.
And he weaves together different threads, right? It's not just the science.
Exactly. That's what makes it so compelling. You've got three main narratives braided together. First, obviously, the scientific story itself.
Like Mendel and his peas. Yeah. Discovering the basics of inheritance.
Right. Mendel's peas, then figuring out DNA, the double helix, all of that.
Okay. Thread one. What's two?
Thread two is, well, it's the darker side. The social and political history. How these new genetic ideas got twisted.
You mean eugenics?
Exactly. The whole chilling eugenics movement, how science was misused for social control. Yeah. It's a really important cautionary part of the story.
Definitely need to remember that. And the third thread.
That's the philosophical, the ethical stuff. Where do we draw the line between using genetics to cure diseases?
Therapy.
Versus using it to, you know, enhance ourselves.
Wow.
To change what it means to be human. That's the big question we're facing now.
Okay, let's dive into that journey, starting at the beginning with Mendel.
Yeah, Gregor Mendel, the quiet monk in his garden in the 1860s. It's almost tragic, really. Well, he did these incredibly careful experiments with pea plants, right? And figured out that traits aren't just blended together.
Like mixing paint, which was the old idea.
Right. He showed inheritance was particulate discrete units. These things we now call genes. It was revolutionary stuff.
But nobody noticed.
Nope. Ignored for decades. Just too far ahead of its time, I guess. People couldn't grasp it.
Until his work got rediscovered, like around 1900.
That's right. And then the race was on. Okay, these units exist, but where are they? Physically, inside the cell.
Which leads us to the fly room.
To the fly room at Columbia, yeah. Thomas Hunt Morgan and his team, they were the ones who really nailed it down.
Using fruit flies? Seems like an odd choice.
They breed fast.
Yeah.
And Morgan's team, through just painstaking work breeding flies, tracking traits like eye color, they proved genes were located on chromosomes.
The chromosomal theory of inheritance.
Exactly. They made genetics a physical science.
And gave us that image. Genes like beads on a string.
That's the one. And they figured out linkage, too, why some traits tend to stick together when inherited. Because their genes are physically close on that same chromosome string.
Okay, so science is charging ahead. But you mentioned a dark side emerging around this time.
We have to talk about it. Eugenics. Francis Galton, who was actually Darwin's cousin, was a major proponent.
And this was, what, applying genetic ideas to society?
In the worst way. Twisting the early, kind of simplistic understanding of heredity into a political weapon, a tool for social engineering based on prejudice.
Mukherjee really emphasizes this wasn't just some fringe idea, right?
No, he's adamant. It wasn't some weird scientific mistake. He calls it the chillingly logical extension of understanding heredity in a very simplistic, biased way.
And it had real consequences.
Horrific ones, especially in America, actually. Mukherjee details the forced sterilizations, thousands of people targeted.
He talks about Carrie Buck.
Yes, the Carrie Buck case is central. Virginia, 1927. The Supreme Court case, Buck v. Bell.
What happened there?
The court basically said, yes, the state can sterilize people it deems socially inadequate to protect society. It's absolutely chilling. Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr.'s infamous line, 3 generations of imbeciles are enough.
God, that's horrifying.
It's the book's starkest warning. Oversimplify genetics, mix it with prejudice, and you pave the way for atrocities. We have to keep that in mind now with the power we have.
Absolutely. A crucial, sobering lesson. So, how did the focus shift back to the molecule itself, to DNA?
Well, after the horrors of eugenics, especially post-World War II, the focus became much more molecular. The question shifted from where genes are to what they actually are. What are they made of?
And the assumption was proteins, right? Because they seem more complex.
Exactly. Proteins have 20 amino acids, lots of variety. DNA just has 4 letters, A, T, C, G. How could that simple molecule hold the blueprint for everything?
Seems counterintuitive.
Totally. So Mukherjee walks us through that thrilling, intense race in the 40s and 50s. Watson, Crick, Maurice Wilkins.
But he also gives a lot of credit to Rosalind Franklin.
A huge amount, and rightly so. Her contribution was absolutely essential, though often downplayed at the time.
Her x-ray pictures.
Her x-ray crystallography, specifically photograph 51. It was this stunningly clear image showing DNA was a helix, a spiral.
And that gave Watson and Crick the clue they needed.
Not just the shape, but her precise measurements, too. That data allowed them to build the correct double helix model in 1953. It was the key. It showed how genetic info could be copied.
The secret of life unlocked. So fast forward about 50 years, the Human Genome Project. Sequencing everything. What did we learn?
Some humbling things, actually.
How so?
Well, the big surprise was how few genes we have. Only around 20,000 protein coding genes.
That's it. I thought it would be way more.
Everyone did. It's about the same number as a mouse, less than some worms or even rice.
So fewer genes than rice. That is humbling.
Right. It blew away that simple idea of one gene, one trait, or one gene, one disease for most things. Complexity clearly wasn't just about the number of genes.
So where does the complexity come from then?
It's in the regulation. How genes are turned on and off, when, how much. It's like having fewer ingredients, but a vastly more complex recipe book controlling how they're used.
Okay. The control system is key.
Exactly. And understanding that complexity, that regulation, it leads us right into the modern era and the real game changer, CRISPR.
CRISPR-Cas9. We hear about it all the time. It comes from bacteria.
Yeah, it's basically a bacterial immune system they use to fight off viruses. We've adapted it.
And it lets us do what exactly?
Edit the genome with incredible precision. Think of it like a find and replace function for DNA. The Cas9 enzyme is like molecular scissors, and a guide RNA tells it exactly where to cut.
So we've gone from just reading the code
to being able to rewrite it. Cheaply, easily, precisely. It's a monumental shift. We're not just readers anymore. We're potential authors.
Which brings up those core themes Mukherjee explores.
Yeah.
You mentioned the gene as a duality.
Yes, this constant tension. Is the gene abstract information, a code, or is it physical material, that DNA molecule?
How does that play out?
Think about genetic testing. If you test for Huntington's, that's a single gene mutation. We're focused on the physical DNA error.
Okay.
But if you get a risk score for heart disease from, say, 23andMe, that involves many genes plus environment, We're treating the gene more like information, probability. Medicine flips between these views all the time.
That difference between single gene, monogenic, and many polygenic conditions seems really important for listeners to grasp.
Crucial. Monogenic diseases are often severe but rare. Most common stuff, heart disease, diabetes, even height, is polygenic. Dozens, hundreds of genes interacting with lifestyle, with chance.
Which gets us past that old simplistic nature versus nurture debate.
Exactly. The book really dismantles that. It's not one or the other. It's a dance.
Genes deal the hand, but environment and choices play the cards.
Sort of. And now we know about epigenetics, which is another layer entirely.
What's that in simple terms?
It's about how environmental factors like diet, stress, toxins can actually put little chemical tags on your DNA. They don't change the sequence, the letters, but they change how tightly the DNA is wound up, which affects whether the genes in that region can be read or not. They change gene expression.
So the environment can directly tweak how our genes work.
Yes. Your genes are constantly interacting with your world. It's dynamic.
So for you, the listener, getting a genetic risk report, it's not a life sentence.
Definitely not for most common polygenic conditions. It's about probabilities, predispositions. Knowing a risk might empower you to make lifestyle choices that nudge those probabilities in a better direction. It's a dialogue.
Which leads to that other huge theme,
yeah.
This power we now have. It forces us to define normal, doesn't it?
Right. CRISPR and germline editing changes that would be passed down generations make this urgent. Are variations like deafness, maybe certain behaviors, are they errors to be fixed?
Or just part of human diversity?
Exactly. Where do we draw that line? Who decides what's normal or desirable? That's a profound ethical challenge.
The book has some really memorable lines crystallizing these big ideas.
It really does. One that sticks with me is about identity. The gene is the fundamental unit of information, but it is also a story. The history of the gene is the story of how we imagine ourselves.
That really hits home. Our understanding of heredity shapes our self-concept.
Totally. And then there's the stark warning about eugenics, which bears repeating. Eugenics was not a scientific aberration. It was the chillingly logical extension of a simplistic and prejudiced understanding of heredity.
A reminder that science needs ethical guardrails.
Desperately. And finally, capturing the present moment. We have now entered an era where we are no longer just the readers of our genome, but potentially its authors.
That sums up the CRISPR dilemma perfectly. Therapy versus enhancement.
It puts the choice squarely in our hands.
So thinking practically, how does understanding all this help us day to day?
Well, first, it gives you the background, the ethical framework, to actually participate in the big public conversations that are happening now.
But things like gene editing policy, stem cells.
Exactly. These aren't just science fiction anymore. They're real policy debates with huge consequences. This book equips you to engage thoughtfully.
And on a personal health level.
It helps you have much better conversations with your doctor or a genetic counselor. Understanding monogenic versus polygenic risk, what a screening test actually means. It improves your health literacy.
Makes you a more informed patient.
Definitely. And for anyone thinking about family planning, it offers a really deep perspective on prenatal screening choices and the bigger societal questions about selecting traits.
These are complex, often difficult decisions.
Incredibly complex. And having this historical and scientific context is invaluable.
What was the biggest takeaway for you reading this? What really stood out?
For me, it was how Mukherjee masterfully connects the dots. The scientific discovery, the personal story, the political misuse, showing how intertwined it all is, how quickly science can be warped. That need for constant vigilance really resonated.
Yeah, I agree. For me, it was that blend of the epic scale of the science with his own family's intimate struggles. It made the whole thing feel incredibly human, not just abstract biology.
Yeah.
And the lesson, well, maybe it's that knowledge, especially powerful scientific knowledge, has to come with humility and a deep understanding of history. Otherwise, we risk repeating terrible mistakes,
yeah,
just with more powerful tools.
That's very well put. We are absolutely at a crossroads. For all of human history, we've played the hand genetics dealt us. Now we're starting to stack the deck.
Changing the game for all future generations.
Sure, potentially, yes. We have the power to alter the human germline forever. So the choices we make now about how we use this power, they will fundamentally test our definition of what it means to be human. That's the big thought to grapple with.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ecotra Foundation.